Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hello.
Hello.
Happy spooky Halloween. Jared, there are two things I miss about having a daily show on the national radio. One is every Halloween getting to play the Monster Mash by Bobby Boris Pickett and the Crypt Kicker Five.
Yeah, that was
the
nice.
Scariest piece of audio ever recorded. And the other is the money.
I thought you were going to say being Anna Hill Corpse and Jeff Foyd.
Oh yeah, that was good, wasn't it? Our Halloween names.
But the money, yeah, the money.
Yeah, the money. Yeah, the money was nice as well. Yeah. Those are just the two things really. But how's your Halloween been?
I didn't decorate my house.
You say this because you've turned up here tonight.
I know, that house looks brilliant. You've got a massive spider's web and a massive spider, two pumpkins with candles, and a very large assortment of other winter vegetables.
Gourds, squashes, pumpkins, so on. This is,
it looks
this
amazing.
Is something Sarah's been doing, and I mocked her. I think I said on the podcast the other week, because there was just one pumpkin for a while, not a jack-o'-lantern, just a pumpkin on the doorstep. Yeah. And it looked like a delivery man had been and we weren't in.
It did.
But she has turned it round.
There's it looks brilliant.
There's an autumnal wreath on the door. Also, I've noticed other people in the neighbourhood have started putting pumpkins and gourds on their doorstep.
They're copying you. She's setting a trend.
She is. It's cultural imperialism. Mm. This is what Americans do.
Yeah, it's working.
Ah, because I think you've sort of got a problem with Halloween, haven't you?
No,
because
I don't have a problem with Halloween. But I was saying earlier that I feel bad that I just don't get into it, and I need to get into it because it's really fun. But because it's not something that I don't have any sort of nostalgic feelings of, like, oh, when I was a kid, I really want to take my son because I used to do this as a kid, didn't do it as a kid, that I just don't have that thing to it. So I want to. Next year, I'm determined next year I'm going to get into it next year.
But a lot of people say, oh, it's just so Americanized. It's so American. Mm. A lot of people say that, don't
you hear
they?
That, yeah.
And I think that is true. I've said before that I think E.T. was the tipping point. Everyone saw that film, thought, oh, that's what they do in America. And then we started Trick or Treat.
Because it looked fun.
It did look fun. Yeah. More fun than wheeling around an effigy of a man who was executed hundreds of years previously.
We don't have good traditions.
No, we don't. I do think, you know, we're thought of as being this country with this rich history, which of course we are. But some of our traditions are rubbish.
Fireworks good, that Guy Fawkes thing bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the other countries have fireworks.
I know, yeah.
But I do like that at this time of year. It's nice when it's dark.
Mm-mm.
You don't want to see fireworks when it's still light, do you?
No.
Or indoor fireworks. But I do miss, because Halloween was a thing, but it wasn't this tricks or treat dressing up thing quite so much, was it? It was bobbing for apples.
Oh, yeah.
It's a bit like waterboarding.
Yeah.
That we used to do. We've been out tricks or treating.
Wait, I'm noticing you're calling it tricks or treating. Can I bring that up at all, or should I let that pass?
I'm going to try it on for size.
Okay.
We were watching the Charlie Brown Halloween special before, and I noticed they called it tricks or treats. And that then got me thinking, we think trick or treating is an American thing.
Mm.
It certainly seems like in the late 60s or early 70s or whenever that was made, they were calling it tricks or treats.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
And is anyone doing any tricks, or is that? Because I do remember as a kid, I very occasionally getting like one or two trick or treaters, and if you didn't have treats, they put flour through your letterbox.
Yeah, or throw an egg at you.
Yeah,
or
eggs.
Set fire to your house.
Yeah, that doesn't happen anymore.
I haven't come across it.
You know, I only found out last year that the way you know what house to go to is that they have some kind of sign, like a pumpkin, or I didn't understand. I'd never been before. I didn't know what you had to do.
Oh yeah, our neighbourhood is it's very very it's very family orientated neighbourhood. There's lots of young families here, and the first year we moved in before June was born, we knew this, so we got in loads of treats. And then we sat in all night and not one kid knocked on the door.
Oh, okay.
And we thought, oh, I wonder if we got a reputation for being the creepy people whose house you don't go near.
Right.
That childless couple trying to lure children in. But in actual fact, it was that's the sign. You've got to put a lit jack-o'-lantern outside your house.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that too. Yeah. It's respectful,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Tell you what we went as.
Oh, no, go on.
Okay.
What, you got dressed up?
Yeah, I'll show you.
Is that normal? I'm asking that as a genuine question. Do all other parents dressed up?
I never have in the past, but many, many parents do.
Do they? That's lovely.
I'd say maybe a slight majority.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, do you know what Gene went as this year?
I saw him. He went as like a Sergeant Pepper Beatles.
Yeah, so he went
costume.
As Paul McCartney from the Sergeant Pepper cover. Now, I think this is quite a clear example of joint parental failure. So on my part, foisting things I'm interested in too much on my kid,
right,
to make him into a mini me. And I promise you, I don't consciously try to do that. I expose him to stuff, and if he likes it, then I'll pick it up and run with it. And I feel like I've got into things like Pokemon Go that I've had no interest in.
Okay,
and yeah, the Beatles are quite present in our house. I listen to them a lot, and he's latched onto them.
Okay.
So he asks questions, I give him answers. He's become more and more interested. But I am willing to look at the fact that there is some kind of failure on my part in that I've made him, in the year 2023, this hip kid in school going on about the hits from 1964. Not great.
There are worse things he could be into, but yeah, I get your point.
And I don't think it's much different to dads and mums who do it with football teams.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Is it any different?
No, of course not. Yeah. No.
And then it's a parental failure on Sarah's part because in our country, the United Kingdom, Halloween costumes are, I think, for the most part, witches, skeletons,
werewolves, ghoulish things.
Whereas in America, it's just fancy dress.
Yes, but why is it just fancy dress? Because
I don't know.
It's Halloween.
I don't know.
I don't get that.
I've wondered if it's because of Christians. You know, like they hate Harry Potter.
How do they?
Yeah, they think it's like demonic. It's encouraging, not your nice commoner garden Christians who, you know, donate a bit of money to Salvation Army at Christmas. I mean the nutty ones.
Okay.
I believe that things with witches and ghosts and ghouls are gateways to becoming a Satanist.
Okay, so it's that kind of feeling that's led
but
to
I don't
that.
I don't know if that's why it is. That's just a theory I've got. I'd love to know. So the parental failure on her part is that he thinks Halloween is just fancy dress.
Okay.
And he's the only kid who thinks that.
Right.
And the parental failure on my part is that he's a 7-year-old who's too into the Beatles.
And these two things came together on Halloween.
Yeah. So he wanted to go as Sergeant Pepper. It's Paul McCartney from the Sergeant Pepper cover. So then yesterday I was thinking about this and I was thinking, oh, poor kid, he's like going to be out, the only person dressed as a Beatle, not anything ghoulish. What could we do? So in a panic, I ordered some extra Sergeant Pepper costumes.
So he said it wasn't just him.
So it wasn't just him, there was three of us. So he didn't feel alone, a bit of solidarity, right? So I'll show you a picture. You can see from the expression on my wife's face just how much she's enjoying it.
Oh, God. Oh, wow. You look amazing. She does not look happy.
No,
I love that picture. That looked fantastic.
So Jean is dressed as Paul McCartney in blue. And then Sarah's dressed as John Lennon in green, and then I'm George Harrison in the reddish costume. So then when we were tricks or treating, I had a little quip to make.
Oh, go on, yeah.
which was, "We're the Dead Beatles."
Makes it
more Halloween-y.
Yeah, yeah.
So John and George are dead.
Yeah.
Famously.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, there's that conspiracy theory that Paul's dead as well.
This is a lot of explaining. So I'm just thinking in my head, but I think only two of them are dead, aren't they? Like, Ringo's still alive, Paul's alive, there's only two. But, so this is not a good quipping that people are having to think too much.
No, I was just sort of pointing to the two of us, really, and saying
all
the dead ones.
Oh, okay.
But at least that made it a bit Halloween-y.
Yeah, yeah. I always see, yeah.
Like we were zombies.
Didn't it go well?
Not really, No. Nobody seemed to enjoy that little joke.
Okay. About as well as it went with me, really.
We also, at the weekend, we went to a spooktacular.
Oh, what's that?
So, I don't know, to be honest.
Like, you went?
One of Jean's friend's mums bought them all tickets to it. Mm. And it was like a kid's Halloween party in a church.
Okay.
But it wasn't religious.
Right.
And there was a magician on doing tricks and also playing Halloween theme music like the Monster Mash.
This sounds brilliant.
And Ghostbusters. And I'm sure there must be another one. Thriller.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm not entirely comfortable with that at a children's party.
Yeah.
And then lots of things which aren't really very Halloween-y, but there's a bit of a dearth of good.
Well, like, I always know that from when I used to watch X Factor Halloween Week, and they would be really like dredging up stuff.
Sarah insists that this Backstreet Boys song is Halloween-y, but it's only Halloween-y because the video was spooky.
Which one?
Backstreet's all right.
That's not Halloween.
Yeah.
No.
I think it's that one. Maybe it isn't. But certainly the song isn't Halloween-y, but the video is. So it's become a Halloween classic.
Okay.
Which I strongly disagree with.
Me too.
Super Freak.
Mm, okay, just about.
Which doesn't feel great.
Mm.
Doesn't feel great. And then there's a song, a more modern song called She's Sweet But She's Psycho.
What? No. That's not Halloween-y.
I know, but it's slim pickings, you see.
It's very slim.
And so they had the music, and then this guy was doing a magic show and some competitions. And I was chatting away to a friend who was there, and we were deep in conversation. And then I become aware that Jean's little friend, Elsie, is tugging at my arm. And unbeknownst to me, she's involved in a competition on stage where she's got to come and find a grown-up, and her mum has refused to join in, as has Sarah, and they've pointed her to me. And they have to take them onto the stage, and it's two kids competing to see who can most quickly wrap their grown-up in toilet paper to make them into a mummy.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, yeah.
So I don't want to do it, but I also have this thing that I don't ever want to a child to seem like this repressed, embarrassed individual that I am, full of shame and shyness. So I enthusiastically go with it whilst wanting to die on the inside. And then we stand on the stage, and I think, actually, this is pretty easy from my point of view, because the guy isn't interviewing me. He's not putting a microphone under my mouth, so I don't have to think of anything funny to say or interesting.
Yeah.
And all I've got to do is stand still while she wraps me in toilet paper.
Easy.
So I can just sort of zone out,
mm-hmm.
which is what I do. I listen to him count down, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and it starts. After a while, and because I've zoned out, I couldn't tell you how long it is, I become aware that the other team is doing a lot better.
Right.
And what I then realise is the other adult, the other man, presumably a dad, but I could be wrong, is helping a little bit and holding the tissue paper in place.
Right.
Whereas I'm just standing there as if I'm a statue, and Elsie's getting increasingly frustrated. And I think, oh, if I just like held that there or helped her a little bit, we would have some mummy wrapping on me at this point instead of a frustrated 7-year-old girl about to burst into tears on stage.
Oh, no.
Which is what happened.
She started crying.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And refused to carry on with the game because it was going so badly for her. And I just think if I'd just been a bit more present. I was sort of present. Like I was in a nice...
Look, she needs to learn resilience. Sorry, you're blaming yourself here. Oh, I'm God. Not.
And then she stormed out.
Mm-hmm.
And I went outside to check she was all right.
Mm.
And it was quite slippy underfoot, and I went over in the mud. not good.
You know when kids like really look up to grown-ups? And
I don't think any kid. Oh. She is the kid. Do you remember last year I told you about taking them to Bonfire Night?
Yeah.
And she had a meltdown and they just spent the whole time saying how terrible it was and how they would never, ever go to that place again and it was the worst Bonfire Night ever.
Mm-mm-mm.
Same kid.
Yeah.
She, no respect there.
She won't be coming for you next time, don't worry.
Right, let's hear from the drifters.
Let's. First one is Ali. I've dithered for months around if I should send this story in and kept putting it off because a little bit of me is hoping it was all a bad dream. However, I know, in all honesty, it really happened. And somewhere out there, there is recorded proof. So I've decided it's time to tell my tale of social ineptitude to my fellow drifter kind.
This is a safe space.
I work as a community-based therapist in the NHS. I love my job and I'm generally pretty competent in the workplace. I regularly go to people's houses to carry out home visits. And although I have a particular specialism, it's not uncommon for me to come across things which require another service. I regularly contact other teams to update them about patients' needs or pass on referral information. One day towards the end of last year, I had been to review a patient who had a life-limiting condition. Whilst there, it became apparent that one of my pieces of medical equipment, which was fairly significant in their care, was not charging correctly. It was difficult for them to alert the relevant team, so I offered to get it sorted. A quick phone call and it had been managed. It was near Christmas and I didn't want there to be any further problems, so as soon as I left the property and was safely in my car, I rang the relevant team. The phone rang and rang, and then the answer phone clicked in, and this is where I became unstuck. Now, I'm reasonably okay with phone calls when needed, but answer phones in all contexts baffle me. I seem to get tongue-tied and either say too much or forget an important detail and have to ring back again to leave another message. However, on this occasion, I was feeling pleased with myself. I'd got my message across, I explained the problem and given the details, and then I ended my message. If you could please contact the patient to get this sorted, amen. I put the phone down. Hang on. A terrible dread slowly crept up on me. Did I just end a message with amen? Amen? Now, just to explain, I am a Christian, so amen is a word I say in some contexts, but these are very specific and definitely not on a work phone call. What was I thinking? Here I was ending a message to another service like I was ending a prayer. Not only that, but it was an answer phone message so it could be replayed to check they'd heard it right, then replayed around an office for amusement. Perhaps it would be used for some kind of Christmas party game where staff had to guess the stupidest caller to the service that year, or recounted in some future training course as an example of poor communication skills. Should I phone back and explain? But what would I say? I couldn't leave a message saying, "Hi, it's me again. Please just ignore the last bit of my message, which sounds like I think you're God, but not the rest of it. That's really important." What if I phoned back and the answer phone didn't click in as someone was back in the office ready to pick up the phone? I sat there in my car and willed the ground to swallow me up. There really was no return from this. Since this occurred, I've tried to employ the port protocol and pretend it never happened. But every so often, the memory pops into my head. And once again, I'm filled with embarrassment and my ridiculous answer phone blurt. The only reprieve is that shortly after this incident, I started adoption leave, so I haven't needed to navigate work calls for a while. But with my return to work swiftly approaching, I think I might need to write myself a script for all work calls to remind myself how to function as a normal human being.
What was the name again?
Her name,
yeah.
Ali.
Ali, I'd love to know when you say amen and when you say amen.
What did I say?
You said amen, but I do feel amen. Like sometimes it's one, sometimes it's the other.
I think she probably said amen. Why did I say amen?
Amen. Feels a bit more like you're in the deep south of America and there's some kind of revival going on and everyone's getting carried away rather than...
Amen. Yeah, I'm regretting saying amen.
I like it. I like it. And I just want to reiterate what I said before.
Hmm.
I was only talking about the Christians who think Harry Potter's a gateway drug to the devil.
Oh, don't worry.
Ali's one of those.
No, of course not.
I think Ali's a nice sort of...
She's one of us.
Away in a manger, we plough the fields and scatter.
Exactly.
Gideon's Bible.
Yeah.
That stuff.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to Coral. During the summer, I went for a long weekend at a Warner's Holiday Hotel with my parents. I was 23 at the time. The hotel was a converted stately home and there was the usual evening entertainment and some activities during the day. Two of the activities included archery and shooting, which I was very excited for. We went to the leisure reception and booked these activities for the following day. After booking these activities, we thought we'd have a drink on the balcony as it was a lovely sunny day. The view across the grounds from our table was beautiful, and in the distance, just poking out from behind some trees, we could see some figures with rifles standing in a line. "Look, I can see the shooting range over there," I said very excitedly. When we finished our drinks, we thought we would stretch our legs and have a wander over to see this shooting range. However, as we walked closer and the trees stopped creating such a barrier, we could see there were even more figures. A lot more. Could it be that it is so popular, almost everyone in the hotel partakes in the shooting, as if there was one target for each person? As we got closer, we began to see many more things by the figures, one of which included wreaths of poppies and flowers. It suddenly dawned on us that this was not a shooting range for the elderly, but something completely different. As we got closer and closer, I was wishing the ground would swallow me up. Oh, it turned out to be a Falklands memorial.
Oh, God.
Well, my initial excitement led me to imagine a scene from Die Hard and the Hunger Games, gaining 5 points for the head, 10 points for the chest. It turns out the hotel really didn't think this would be a popular activity. It's probably for the best, considering the hotel is adults only, with a target audience of the elderly. I think this would trigger some PTSD and shell shock, which wouldn't lead them a very good review on TripAdvisor. The last thing you need while sipping a glass of Chardonnay while listening to an ABBA tribute band is the paranoia of being shot. While a die-hard shooting range sounds exciting, you should always know the audience. When we eventually got to the correct shooting range the following day, it was a much more relaxing experience with small targets, etc. Amen.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, just anything like that, it just reminds me of when there's a silence, like a minute's silence in memory of the war dead or whatever, and then somebody doesn't quite realize. It's happened to me before now. It happened to our friend Pete.
Oh.
Do you remember? I think it was the 9/11.
Oh, God.
A few days, he'd gone up to a floor of the office to ask this, another friend of ours, Adam Bowie, who was this computer whiz kid. Pete was one of these who had a laptop, but he didn't really want to get on board with the 21st century. So he was forever having problems with it and having to take it to Adam, who didn't work in IT or anything.
No.
And he was up there explaining his various woes and swearing his head off about his computer, and the 9/11 2 minute silence had started. And nobody wanted to go, "Pete, it's a 2 minute silence," because then that would mean they themselves were breaking the 2 minute silence.
But they really should have done, really. Yeah.
But they just let him swear about his computer throughout the whole thing. Send us your story of social ineptitude, please. It's hello@adriftpodcast.com. Annabelle, we were off last week because I was away in Chicago.
Yes.
Did you do a Substack or did you take a week off that?
Yes, no, I didn't. No, I did. Last week I did What I Never Get Right First Time, and I ended up doing a slight, you remember the old challengey type things?
Oh, yeah.
I did a bit of that, a few phone calls, transforming the fortunes of a pharmaceutical company.
Oh, I'm intrigued. I'll go back and have a look.
So that was last week. And this week, so it's to supermarkets. I haven't quite got my angle yet, but you know, I've been to a few supermarkets in my time, as anyone listens to this podcast will know. Yeah. I got a few stories.
When you say a few supermarkets, isn't it usually the same branch of Sainsbury's?
Yeah, yeah.
And then for many years before that, it was the same branch of Tesco's.
I was trying to make my life sound more exciting than it was, and I failed. Thanks for pointing that out. So go to annabelleport.substack.com. You can subscribe and have it in your inbox every Wednesday.
And do you have another way in which you are not a fully functioning adult?
I do. So, are you familiar with Vinted?
Funnily enough, I wasn't until 2 days ago and I heard somebody mention it.
Oh, really? Okay. So, if you don't know what it is, it's a website and an app where you can buy and sell secondhand stuff. It's mostly clothes. So, you're basically trading off an easy way to return 90% of the stuff that probably won't fit or suit you for a really cheap price. I don't think you can return stuff most of the time. So, that's the deal. You get something cheap, probably won't fit.
Right.
Did you know it's Lithuanian? It's a Lithuanian company.
No.
It's interesting.
As I say, I'm quite new to the concept of Vinted. So, like any information is new information.
Okay. So I've known about it for a while, but this week I started selling some clothes on it.
Lithuanians and let's do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love.
Is that in that song, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Didn't know that.
Yeah, because I think people from Latvia used to be called Let's. So they made a little pun.
Oh.
Lithuanians and let's do it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Right. It's good to know. We're all learning something here.
Sorry. So you decided to buy or sell something?
Sorry, I've started selling clothes on it this week.
Oh, yeah.
And I am so obsessed.
Oh, no.
It's like I'm dealing in diamonds and not just reselling a Charles T-shirt that I bought in Sainsbury's for £1 now. I'm honestly, I'm acting like I'm running a multi-million pound business. I'm dealing with people hardballing me. Like they say things like, will you take £1 for those two pairs of dinosaur pajamas? Like I'm only charging £1.50 for them. Just pay it. They love a bargain on Vinted. They really do. But I'm totally addicted. Nothing in my house is now safe. Like every item is nervous it's going. I think that my house is going to be empty by the end of next week. When something gets favorited, the buzz I get, not as good as when something gets sold. The amount I'm checking this app, I'm having to move it around my phone screen occasionally as the glass is starting to wear down in places. And I'm doing same or next day posting. I'm offering a great service. It's like if Lord Alan Sugar was in charge of selling the clothes that my son had grown out of, honestly. But what I love the most, I wonder if you've used these. So you know those parcel lockers where you drop packages off? Have you used them before?
Oh, yeah, I think so, yeah.
Oh, my God. I love them so much. So you scan your barcode. And then a door just magically opens and it's really fun guessing what one it's going to be. And you put your package in, don't need a label, close it, done. It feels so futuristic to me.
Unbelievable.
But it also makes me feel like I'm a spy doing a dead letter drop. Even though I'm not sure spies do dead letter drops in this day and age. And if they did, it probably wouldn't be in the 24/7 in-post locker in a Sainsbury's car park. They probably stick to tree hollows and books with the inside cut out still, don't they? My only criticism of them is the 2 hours it takes me to position the QR code correctly in front of the scanner. And that's probably just a me thing. The best thing about them is that you don't have to use the parcel shops at newsagents, because I hate these. Because when
I'll tell you who hates them even more than you do.
Oh, go on.
Newsagents. They never either find a parcel for you or accept a parcel from you gladly.
Right. Do you think that they, if you don't buy something, do you think they hate you?
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm like, I always feel if I'm going in there that I should spend some money. I need to buy something, but I don't want to. And I worry that they think I'm just using them and wasting their time and annoying them.
Yeah, the system never seems to be good that they use either, does it?
Right.
You know, I used to think that about the post office when you get one of those red slips.
Oh, yeah,
You can never see your own parcel and you can never quite glean the system by which they organise things. Hmm. But honestly, that looks like something from, I don't know, like a highly organised Japanese society compared to how newsagents keep those parcels in a heap. I mean, it's just a heap, isn't it? I don't understand. To me, there often seems to be no delineation between received parcels and parcels that are being sent.
Oh, that's so confusing.
Yeah.
There is no filing system, is there?
No.
But I think they maybe not trained in this area. They're not post office people. They're news agents people. There's not so much of a crossover, but there is now. I also have this when I need to top up my electricity key. Yes, I've still got prepaid electricity. Firstly, I hate it when I have to say how much I want on it, because I tend to do big amounts so that I don't have to keep going back. So I say, for example, £80, and they always go 18. But they say 18 like they must have misheard me, because nobody puts that much on.
Hang on, how long does £80 last you?
Oh, I don't know, about 6 weeks.
Really?
Yeah. What's up?
I'm not good with money.
Right.
And often a way this will manifest is I don't look at bank statements because I'm too horrified by the amounts of money that go out.
Yeah.
Now, we live in a house and you live in a flat.
Yeah.
But I would say our house is not three times as big as your flat.
No.
Right? And I've got a feeling like gas and electric combined, we're paying hundreds of pounds a month.
Oh, really?
Yeah, since the energy prices went up.
Mm.
So now I'm thinking I should go on one of those prepaid.
It's a nightmare when it runs out, especially when it's the middle of the night and like all your food's going off in the fridge, etc. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it. There is an emergency thing where you stick it in again, but yeah, I wouldn't recommend it. I did have this thing where for ages I was on a very old tariff because I stockpiled. And that, but I think I'm on the right tariff now. Yeah. And it has gone, it used to be like £30 a month.
This is unbelievable to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now going to go into, have I got enough charge on my phone? I really want to go into my housekeeping bank account and see how much we pay. Because I'm, there we go.
Go on.
Octopus Energy.
Yeah. Well, it's gas and electricity, though.
Yeah.
Right, per month, go on.
£439.
So mine a month is 120.
Right. Oh, so... Yeah. But that's just electricity.
No, but gas and electricity is 120. Is this interesting?
No, I don't think so.
But I think it's good to compare, isn't it? Yeah, I pay about 120 a month.
But I just thought you said £80 had last you 6 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah,
£60
yeah.
a month.
Yeah. Adds up. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. That wasn't worth anybody's time, really, was it?
But you know what? People will be listening going, oh, I'm going to go and check my director a bit now.
Yeah. Do you want to know how much my council tax is?
Go on.
Have a guess.
Okay, well, mine's 165 a month, so I'm reckoning yours is...
Higher or lower?
Oh, definitely higher. Definitely higher.
Number then? You can
give me a number. 250 a month.
181.
Oh, not that much different. Yeah. Right, let's do mobile phone now. Ooh. So my mobile phone is like, I'm actually embarrassed to hear how much mine is a month.
I can't tell you that because it's in a different account.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it would be too embarrassing to tell you mine. Cause it's
home insurance?
Home insurance. Well, mine is £5 a month.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I really shop around. Why should I look at me like that?
Because mine's £108 a month.
A month? What?
I'm just saying. Water.
Oh, £150 every 6 months. So £300 a year.
Yeah, about the same, £26.
Okay. This is thrilling.
Isn't it good, isn't it? I'm not going to like get into my mortgage or anything like that. okay, that'll do. That'll
is
do.
That everything?
Yeah. I mean, no.
And you definitely don't mobile. No, you don't know mobile phone. The top
it's not. Okay. There's a boring reason why it comes out of a different account.
Okay. All right, let's move on.
But that was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, I ended up enjoying that.
Yeah.
That's a game to play with your friends.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, I had to top up my electricity yesterday. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to sort this out once and for all. I'm going to find out if they do hate me for not buying anything. So I topped up the key and then I said, tell me, does it annoy you when people top up and then don't buy anything? And the man said, not really. Not really. It does annoy him, doesn't it? Don't you think? Yeah, not really. Yeah, he'd have gone, no, it's fine. Yeah. Not really. And then I had to use the newsagent's parcel drop off today because it was an every parcel and needed a label. Very annoying. But I thought I'd ask them too. I tried an open question to get more out of them. I said, how do you feel when someone sends a parcel but doesn't buy anything?
Nobody's ever asked them how they feel before.
How do you feel? How do you feel when someone sends a parcel but doesn't buy anything? And he said, nothing. Nothing.
I think that would have been his answer to any question that started, how do you feel?
I think he might be depressed. But he did also tell me, okay, I'm going to ask you this. So he told me that they get a commission per package. How much money do you think they're getting per package to justify having to deal with all that massive pile of parcels?
16p.
Very close.
What?
20p a package.
Ah.
I'm worried now that I'm giving 20p to a robot locker instead of that depressed man, as I much prefer the lockers. So I might have to change. And with all my extra vintage money, I'll start buying some sweets to the newsagents when I do the electricity key. And I think that'll make everything better.
Do you remember our old friend Minu, who ran a newsagent's, Regent's News on Big Street, London, for a long time?
Yeah.
Then he went into the hardware business,
didn't he?
But I believe he's, is he retired now? Anyway, it doesn't matter. Mm. This doesn't matter. But he was, you know, his dream was to get a lottery machine. Not because of the money you make off the lottery, but maybe you do if you get a winning ticket or something. But he thought the footfall that this machine would bring into his shop would be transformational. I mean, there was a man who didn't see apps and the internet coming.
Yeah, well, he would have been wrong. Every news agent who's got one of those parcel machines thought the same thing, and they were wrong.
Yep. I do. Did I tell you? I can't remember if I talked about this on the podcast. We were in Brighton the other week. And it was a Sunday, and I became aware that there was a special commemorative edition of the Daily Mirror about the 60th anniversary of Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah.
So Gene wanted me to get him a copy of this newspaper. I was roaming the streets looking for newsagents. And so many of the shops you think are newsagents that still say news on the outside don't sell newspapers or magazines anymore.
I know this.
It's really hard to find newspapers and magazines. Yeah. I mean, not really hard. You know, it's not like...
No, just go to your doorstep on a Saturday morning and then you'll find one. Still getting it delivered, good.
Just on a weekend.
Just on the weekend, yeah.
Just on a weekend. Mm. I don't like thinking about how much we pay for newspapers.
Oh, God, I haven't asked you that. Mine's zero. What's yours?
So I think, bearing in mind that I can open our front door and speak at this volume and be heard at the newsagents.
Right.
I think every newspaper we have delivered costs us more than the actual newspaper. Bad with money.
How many steps roughly is it, you know, like 20 steps? Not even that, 10 steps.
Yeah, you're like in America, the paperboy just throws the newspaper at the house.
Yes, they could do that.
I think they could throw the newspaper.
They're charging you that much.
I think so, yeah.
I might get a paper round in this area. I'm really tempted.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I tell you about the spooky thing that happened to my wife Sarah the other night.
Oh yes, please, I love spooky things.
All right, we got back off holiday, and because of the time difference, we're jet lagged, and in this direction it means that we're up very, very late. We are late night people anyway. Yeah. And this is exacerbated by the jet lag. However, I've gone a couple of nights without sleeping, and I passed out on the sofa. So she is, it's late at night, it's after midnight, the witching hour. She is watching on TV all alone this show Uncanny. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yes.
It's a podcast, but they made it into a TV show about people who think they've seen ghosts.
Yep.
And she's getting freaked out by it. And then she just hears this weird meowing. She's thinking, is that coming from the TV? Is it part of the show? She pauses the TV. It carries on. She wakes me up to ask if I can hear it. But it's stopped. She thinks she's having a breakdown. I go back to sleep. It starts again. She wakes me up again. She says, will you go and look outside and see if there's a cat around the bins? I do. And there isn't. I come back in. I nod back off again. She wakes me up. The meowing is back. This time I can hear it. And I'm walking around thinking, where is that coming from? But I can't tell. I then think, it's coming from under the floorboards.
Oh, no.
I go down into the cellar.
Yeah.
And I see through a little hole in the brickwork this tiny cat that's really afraid that has clearly been in our house all the time we were away.
No.
And do you want to know how I know this? Because when we got back, in amongst the post was one of these lost cats. Printed pictures with the cat's name, Luna, and a telephone number on it. I call the number. They don't answer because it's, you know, nearly one in the morning. I call it again. They don't answer. Sarah calls it from her number, figuring three calls from unknown numbers.
Mm.
They're going to realize something's up.
Yeah.
They answer. They are delighted. She takes it round there. We feel like heroes the next day. They drop off a box of chocolates. What a wonderful thing. Now, I knew about this missing cat as we were setting off to go to the States.
Okay.
Because Sarah got a WhatsApp from a friend saying, oh, some local friends have lost their cat. Has anyone seen it? I had seen it. The day before we went away, it was in our back garden, and I gave it some milk. I put it out in the back garden.
Yeah.
That night, as I was putting Gene to bed, he was going, the cat is in the house. Because he'd seen the cat in the morning. He's going, the cat is in the house. And I thought he was just being weird.
God, no.
So this has gone from being a nice story about us being a hero to me ignoring my son telling me that this cat was in the house. Because I just thought he was saying, you know, kids say weird things.
Yes.
And there was no trace of the cat in the house, nor was, we hadn't left them. I mean, the back door had been open at different stages during the day, but it hadn't just been left open. None of us had seen the cat in the house. But he says weird things like, I can hear every cat's meow. It's like a spooky thing to say anyway. Mm. So I just thought he was saying one of his weird things.
No.
As it turns out, he wasn't. And I accidentally imprisoned a cat in our house.
For the whole week?
Yeah, I mean, it was five nights, I think.
What did it eat?
Well, I think it might have worked out quite well for us.
Because it ate all the mice.
I think so, yeah.
No.
So, before we went away, I saw this very cute little mouse. And regular listeners will know that I just won't harm an animal.
Mm.
As a sop to my wife, I've bought these things to scare the mice that you plug into the plug sockets that supposedly emit a high-pitched noise.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll work very well.
Right.
So I think this cat has dealt with that problem for us. I think it feasted on mouse.
That's an amazing week.
I think it did. You know, maybe it had a great holiday.
It feels like a bit sort of like Home Alone-y, doesn't it?
Yes! I'm so pleased you've helped me reframe this into it's a Home Alone adventure for the cat rather than me ignoring my son
it's
telling us there's a cat in the house.
On mouse. Oh my God.
Okay, thanks for that.
You're still the hero, don't worry.
I feel a lot better now. Yeah. Quandary Corner at the GLAP Clinic here in Problematic. Did you just go, you weren't expecting it to be Quandary Corner,
well,
even though it has been for many years an item on this podcast.
I was very distracted by thinking where it went to the toilet.
Oh, probably under the house.
Okay, fine.
Some terrible smells will start drifting up at some stage, won't they?
Okay. Hey, I'll give you an update first of all. Do you remember Helen in Coventry didn't know whether to go on a night out, that 90s night with people she barely knew?
Oh, yes.
She went, had a great time.
What?
Yeah, she enjoyed it.
Did I say that?
That was our advice. We were like,
oh, great. Yeah, yeah.
We were like, you want to go? Can you remember her friends? Like, there was like,
oh, yeah.
There was
yeah,
no tickets
yeah,
left.
Yeah.
And she felt like she shouldn't go.
Yes.
Yeah, she said it was great. There are a few problems with her makeup running, and apparently her post-pregnancy pelvic floor is not up to standard, and she slightly peed herself while jumping up and down. But in general, it all went very, very well. We're not to blame for that.
Sarah reminded me of a story that our old fertility doctor told us, which was about he examined a woman in her 60s and she had the I'm just going to say it, vagina of a much younger woman, like very, you know, very tight, I think is the word.
This has gone weird.
No. I know it's horrible. I'm so used to Sarah saying this stuff, and I think it's just part of normal conversation.
Yeah,
then
yeah.
I try and repeat a story.
Especially
to me. Oh, this is disgusting. This is horrible. Anyway.
Oh, you're carrying on. Okay.
No, because there is a point to the story.
Okay.
And what are the exercises you do after you give birth? They're called Kegels.
They're things you can put in, but yeah, it's pelvic floor exercises, yeah.
She didn't realise that you only had to do them for a certain amount of time after giving birth.
Oh.
So she'd been doing them for like 40 years or whatever.
Oh, fabulous.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lesson to us all.
Yeah.
Ladies.
Yeah. I mean, I really wish I hadn't launched into that. But sorry about that, everybody. If you want to hear that kind of filth.
No, not here.
Right, my wife will provide that on the other podcast.
I was going to say, save it for that one.
Yeah.
Right, let's move on to the actual quandaries. First one's from Emily. Recently, I started to get out of my comfort zone and book massages, mostly to help with my back, which has started to hurt at the grand old age of 27. I've been for a few now and I love spending 45 minutes completely zoned out as someone puts extremely hot stones on my back and rubs them around. I go to a place that has low lighting, candles, dreamy music and herbal tea to set the scene. However, I've started to notice a problem. The last time I was there, I was so quiet. It was clear the massage therapist thought I was asleep and gave me a nudge as if to wake me up at the end. The only issue was, I wasn't asleep. I was just enjoying the uninterrupted silence. To make matters worse, I recently brought my mother for one. And after my usual silent session, my mother went in and came out best friends with the massage therapist. Apparently, they'd been talking the entire time and she now knew her entire story. All this has left me wondering, am I being rude by not talking? I always make sure to reply quite positively if they ask me anything about pressure and temperature. But there's little else I can think to say when I'm face down on one of those little tables and make you lie on with the hole for your face. I assumed it was different from the hairdressers, where you're expected to make the usual chit-chat, and I could simply enjoy a little peace and quiet in my drift of life from the usual terror of small talk. I imagine the massage therapists would probably also enjoy going about their work without having someone constantly talking to them, but maybe I'm just leaving them bored. Last week I went again and spent the entire time trying to think of something to say, to the point that I wasn't focused in being relaxed anymore. Should I stick with the silence, or do you have any recommendations for massage therapy suite appropriate small talk?
I don't particularly enjoy a massage.
Oh.
Every now and again, but generally not. But I do think it is an environment where you are completely okay to be silent.
I strongly agree. Yeah.
So I think if you do speak, probably a massage therapist might like it because most people are silent. It's probably nice to have a little bit of a chat every now and again, depending on the therapist. Maybe a lot of them don't.
And who you're talking to.
But the social contract isn't like, so it would be weird if you kept shutting stuff down with a hairdresser because the social contract is if they want to chat, then you chat. But I think the etiquette in a massage parlour is that you're silent.
Because you're supposed to be going into a deeply relaxed state. You're not supposed to be thinking of small talk.
No.
This is insanity.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the fact that your mum is so friendly, she made friends with her, but do not feel under pressure to do the same.
No, not at all. Not at all. And I don't see the problem with the nudge.
Oh, being nudged to... Well, yeah, no, I
because
that wouldn't bother
me. Because if it's the end anyway...
Yeah, it wouldn't bother me. Yeah. No, that's fine.
Okay. Anything else?
Swiftly dealt with, no. Okay, let's move on to Declan. Me and my mostly non-drifter partner managed to buy a house at the end of August and we're moving in very soon. All good news, but a couple of weeks ago we were in DFS looking for a sofa. We had narrowed our options down to two, though we had started gravitating towards one of them. We asked one of the staff working there a question about the probable second choice sofa. She answered that plus another question and soon had her iPad out confirming our selections and which sofa back and cushions we were getting, etc. She didn't feel super pushy, but was definitely progressing things quickly, and it felt too awkward to back away now given that the process was halfway through. So we bought it. We bought our second choice, basically out of awkwardness. My question though, as a drifter, what's the best way of dealing with sales staff who are intentionally moving things quickly to try and secure a sale? It's not really in my nature to push back against people who are genuinely being friendly, but you can't really buy something you're not sure of either. Although I did here.
Fake diarrhea. You rub your tummy in a circular motion saying, oh, I'm not feeling so good. And then just don't come back.
I think I often feel comfortable saying, I need to think about it and I'm going to come back and then never do.
I would, here's what I would do. I would think of any time you're in a showroom like that, you're just on a recce.
Yeah.
When you're ready to buy, you're going to be doing it online.
Yes. Yes. But how do you make it clear? And then do you worry you're wasting their time? And is it okay? Like say in DFS, like, yeah, they're probably on commission. But what if you're in like a little independent one where it's like, you know, they're bread and butter and you feel like they're desperate for you to buy something, blah, blah,
blah.
Oh,
no, don't go to one of those. Don't support an independent business because you're far more likely to have a conversation.
Yeah. So go to the big stores.
I'm not ready to buy today, but I have a few questions.
Okay.
I won't be buying today, but I have a few questions.
This is how you do it. You make it clear from the offset. Yeah. I'm not buying. I'm just thinking. Yeah. I'm just browsing. Yeah.
If you can take human interaction out of the actual buying.
Yeah.
That would be my advice.
I think that's the perfect solution.
Okay. And that was our podcast. Thank you for listening. If you have a quandary for Quandary Corner or a story for us, you can email us hello@adriftpodcast.com. You can support us on Patreon too. We appreciate that. It's patreon.com/adrift. Thanks to Man and the Echo for the backing music and to Emily Harrison for the incidental music. Carla Gowlett took our photos. Kim Rainey designed our artwork. Amen. Okay, this comes from Kirsty McDougall, who says, "Hi, Jeff and Annabelle. I was wondering if you'd be able to do a podication for my wonderful husband, Pete. He turns 50 on the 1st of November. Oh, he would have been a school year younger than me.
Oh, yeah.
I'd have been able to push him around. I wouldn't have been able to push anyone around."
You weren't pushing the year below around? No, I can't imagine that.
No.
No.
I think they were pushing me around.
No.
And I just wanted to tell him how amazing I think he is. We are both long-time listeners, back to the Absolute Radio days. I must admit I was slow to take up listening to Adrift, not for lack of interest, just a bit slow to the podcast world in general. But on one boring and long drive through France, Pete played an episode for me, the unforgettable Unlucky story.
Oh, good place to start.
Yeah, and I've been hooked ever since. Although Pete certainly has some drifter qualities, I suffer much more social ineptitude. As a former actor, I'm sure many would say this couldn't possibly be true, as I can come off very bubbly and confident, but it's just that, an act. No, it's performance, isn't it? But it asks something of you, doesn't it, Kirsty? And then, you know, you're depleted.
Yeah.
And, you can't play the Dane every night.
No.
Yeah. Where was I up to? In most social situations, I am completely dying inside and spend most nights after a social event cringing at the stupid things I may have said in an effort to be funny.
Sounds familiar.
It really does. Pete, however, seems effortlessly at ease with meeting new people and is so good at remembering names, thank goodness, as I'm always drawing a complete blank. Despite, we sound very similar in many ways here, Kirsty. Despite these social skills, he still identifies as a drifter and proudly wears his fellow drifter and unlucky button pins on his jacket lapel.
Oh, lovely.
Nice. We listen to the podcast separately, but enjoy weekly catch-ups, laughing and relating about whatever life disaster has befallen Jeff that week or how similar myself and Annabelle can be. When life is not going to plan, we stick on an episode and it always makes us feel better. That's a lovely thing to hear. Like most people, our lives have been a roller coaster of ups and downs. Our son Max was born prematurely, and during our long stay in the NICU, Pete was such a supportive rock. When we found out at 28 weeks our unborn daughter had an absent corpus callosum, which is the bit that joins the two hemispheres of the brain together, and were given all manner of scary prognoses, Pete was again amazing. Even though he was hurting as much as I was, he kept strong for the both of us. Soon after birth, we discovered Molly also had a rare genetic condition that resulted in major skull surgery when she was two. And despite being a really scary time, his positive attitude and selflessness got us through. Thankfully, much of what we told by the doctors in the early days didn't come true, and Molly is now a thriving, bubbly 11-year-old. That's so wonderful.
Yeah.
She does have some learning differences and some facial differences that will make her life more difficult, but she has inherited her dad's positive attitude, so I know she'll win at life. I know she will too. And Kirsty, I'm sorry to say it, but it's not just Pete. It's not. I mean, probably lion's share, but It's you too. Pete is the nice guy you always want in your friends group. He is so nice, I almost didn't go out with him. I was in my 20s and in my looking for a bad guy phase. That was phase Sarah's in when she was let me, you see.
Of course.
She wants someone more like Kaniki.
Mm.
So, but that's the character in Grease I most relate to.
Oh, obviously. Yeah.
Thankfully, I came to my senses and we've been together nearly 20 years and married for 16. I can't think of a better 50th birthday present to him than a podication from you both. He recently lost his dear mum, Marge, after a short illness. I think there's no E on the end of Marge, so it might be Marg, which I've never heard before.
No.
But I don't want to say Pete's mum's name wrong.
No, no.
So I'm hedging my bets there. Okay. I think it's probably Marge, but yeah, just in case it isn't, Marg, okay. Who knew?
Yep.
After a short illness, and has found it quite hard, so I know this would cheer him up no end. I adore and love him so much, and Max, finding it moving.
Yeah.
These podications, you keep doing it to me. And Max and Molly think he's the best dad in the world. Thanks so much, Kirsty. Kirsty also wrote some stuff for me and Annabelle that I just wanted to say thank you. It was very meaningful and very much appreciated. But Pete just sounds amazing. I mean, your whole family sounds amazing.
Yes, you all sound great.
And I'm so pleased that that what you were told by the doctors in those early days largely didn't come true. Yeah. That's a great thing to hear. So all our very best wishes.
Happy birthday, Pete.
Happy birthday. 50.
Do you remember being 50?
I mean, there's just no getting away from it. It's not good. It's not good. I mean, Pete with his positive mental attitude, I mean, maybe he sees it differently.
He's fine with it, I'm sure.
It's not so much, here's the thing, it's not that 50's the problem.
Mm.
It's that there's no getting away from that 60's the next one,
yeah,
next big one.
Yeah.
And you, there's no way of dressing that up as young.
None. There's no.
That's the problem with 50.
Yeah. I can see that. Yeah.
So, so there you go. Happy birthday, Pete. All our best to all of you. And if you would like a podcation, email us hello@adriftpodcast.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details. Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.